Assalamu alaikum, hello and welcome dear viewers to Spotlight Middle East. You're watching us on Sahar TV and I'm your host Farah Atwi. Saudi Arabia has sidelined its veteran intelligence chief Prince Bandar bin Sultan as leader of the kingdom's efforts to arm and fund Syrian militants, replacing him with another prince well regarded by US officials for his successes fighting Al-Qaeda, according to Saudi royal advisor. Placing more questions if this change holds promise for a return to a smoother relationship with the US. More surprises have been even caught from the Persian Gulf countries, as Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain have recalled their ambassadors to Qatar after accusing Doha of interfering in the internal affairs of their countries. In the statement, the foreign ministers of the aforementioned states accused Doha of interfering in their country's internal affairs, despite Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Athani's denial of any kind of interference. How would this dispute among the PGCC countries, Persian Gulf Cooperation Council countries, affect the process of war in Syria in light of advancements made by the Syrian army, especially in Yabrud area, at the borders with Lebanon, Arsal specifically? Of course, here I'm joined by Dr. Maher Saloum, an ambassador for peace, to give us more his own opinion and political analysis, of course, towards this new updates concerning the PGCC. But dear viewers, before welcoming our guests here in the studio, we will watch a report that would give us more information about today's episode. We will take a look and be right back. Stay tuned.
The whole Middle East and North Africa region was in shock when Saudi Arabia designated the Muslim Brotherhood, Nusra Front, ISIS, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, Saudi Hezbollah and the Yemeni Houthis as terrorist groups. A move that is considered a twist in the Saudi positions and implementations in the region. On Friday, the government of Saudi Arabia listed five groups as terrorist organizations. The odd thing is that the Saudi government has long been the main supporter of both Nusra Front and the ISIS. Now, by royal decree, any Saudi citizen fighting abroad must return within 2 weeks, and any member of Jabhat al-Nusra or ISIL faces 20 years in prison. The Interior Ministry said on Friday, those who insult other countries and their leaders or attended conferences or gatherings inside and outside the country that aim to target the security and stability and spread sedition in the society will be punished by law. Saudi Arabia also labeled Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist group. This new position from the kingdom is a complete departure from the past relationship with the group. The Muslim Brotherhood has slammed the Saudi move. Meanwhile, Egypt has welcomed the Saudi move against the Brotherhood. And it seems that the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council has effectively split, with reports of plans of a new alliance bringing together Saudi Arabia and Egypt under Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Add to that, Saudi Arabia, the UAE and Bahrain recalled their ambassadors from Doha, which shows that the dispute between Qatar and the Persian Gulf countries became serious. Hundreds of Saudi militants are believed to be operating in Syria, and it seems that Riyadh fears they could pose a security risk when they return home. But will the Saudis really stop funding Syrian terrorists?
Hello and welcome, Dr. Maher Saloum. It's really nice having you on our show today.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
You're welcome. We've been witnessing a major shift in Saudi foreign agenda with the siding, of course, of Bandar, as we highlighted in the introduction, and giving more importance and more chance to Prince Mohammed bin Naif, Prince Naif. How do you read this move today and the timing specifically?
I think a rescheduling of the intellectual foreign agenda of the Saudi Arabians, actually the foreign, let's say, tactic, has been impoverished or been reanalyzed by the king himself and his best advisors, let's say, they have realized that they have not been winning on ground actually through the head of the dossier,
yes,
or the file of Syria, let's say, vis-a-vis all the terrorist groups that we call actually, whether it is Daesh or ISIS, and the Nasra Front and all as sort, you know, as such. Now, the prince has not been successful enough, it seems, in handling such a case or a scenario,
yes,
vis-a-vis the regime of Bashar al-Assad. Let's say, according to them, that's a regime. Now, the legitimate regime of Bashar al-Assad, according to us, has been handling well, actually, those terrorist groups so far, under the all the battles so far across Syria, whether in the north, close to Aleppo, whether it is Yabrud, and we will discuss this, I'm sure, and whether it is the western parts of Homs so far, because they have been winning on ground, and as far as east or northeast, as well as the far border, which is Deir ez-Zor and Al-Hasak.
Okay.
But unfortunately, I have realized something very important to analyze, Mrs. Farah, is that Daesh and the Nasra Front, they have been cooperating in the east against the government troops of Bashar al-Assad.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in other parts of the north, they have been fighting against each other.
Exactly.
This is a question mark about.
We wanted to focus on the factors that led to this, strange move made by Saudi Arabia. According to an article that I have here, they say that the mastermind and principal financier of terror networks, Prince Bandar, has fallen out of favor with both Washington and Riyadh, especially in recent months, in light of the fact that the Syrian crisis has assumed a terminal direction highly unfavorable to the Saudi ruling family. Today, from your own perspective, if you wanted to look at what's going on the ground inside Syria and advancements of the Syrian army, what are the aspects actually that made Saudi Arabia take that decision?
I think they have studied well the whole geographical areas of Syria today, that they have been losing, you know, the whole battle or the war against Dr. Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria. Now they needed to reschedule or reanalyze the whole thing and put an action plan. This action plan, part of it was to put aside the Prince Bandar bin Sultan and put maybe a more moderate figure like the Prince Mohammed bin Naif. Bin Naif, don't forget that Naif was the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. He was the closest to the King Abdullah, right now the current ruler of Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Plus, I mean, but do not forget something very important, Farah, is that the Prince Bandar bin Sultan, he has tried consecutively or intensively to hold talks with the Russian President Vladimir Putin at once, to convince him to try to, I mean, not only to buy arms from Russian market in order to push the economical standards or give more value to the economy of Russia, even though they don't need them at this time, because Russia is doing excellently economically now through their gas and oil producing so far, and they have found so many oil and gas new plants.
Mm-hmm.
Now the thing is, I'm discussing this because economy is vis-a-vis the security zones, actually, or the war zones in the whole Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is important to the superpowers like Russia and the United States.
Okay.
If you look at the point where the United States, Bandar bin Sultan, do not forget, he was the best man of the Americans inside the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, because he served so many years as ambassador of Saudi Arabia inside Washington,
D.C. So he has good relationships with the
U.S. He had excellent relationships, not only with the Americans, but with the Jewish lobby and the AIPAC lobby inside Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So this was actually a point of change, not only exchanging between both characters, I mean Prince Naif and the Bandar.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have realized that it's time for Prince Naif to take charge, and we have heard for sure that he held talks with Washington top figures, officials, and with Europeans lately in Washington.
Promising for a
exactly.
change.
So he has been advancing so far to take lead on the issue of Syria, not only the Syrian issue, but the Middle East, actually representing the Saudis' interests in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and the whole Middle East.
If we wanted to look at more reasons to actually discuss, Doctor, can we say that today criticism over Saudi agenda have been reaching to a point where it's very hard, where anywhere or most of the articles that you read, it's like Saudi Arabia is funding, Saudi Arabia is funding terrorists around the world, Saudi Arabia, we hear that a lot. As if Saudi Arabia reached a point extensively where it has been accused of supporting these takfiris that are committing crimes, whether in Lebanon or even inside Syria. Is it they wanted to change that image and give a new image because they cannot handle the pressure, not only from the Arab countries, but from internationally speaking, Saudi Arabia has become the center point of funding takfiris around the world.
That's an excellent point that you raised, Farah. I think the Saudis want to change, to market a new image by handling
such
a file.
They have reached an awkward position.
Or a dossier and giving that dossier to the new prince, which is Prince Naif. Prince Naif already is the interior minister following his father's footsteps.
Yes.
Now he is in control of all security, actually, inside Saudi Arabia. So that's why he has the privilege or the advantage over other candidates to lead after Prince Bandar has been, you know, asked to move out of this thing. Now the Saudis do not also forget that they, I think to me, as an analyst, I believe they have failed as a foreign, as their foreign agenda has been, you know, losing its structure.
Yes.
Not only the structure, but it's I mean, its components, its nutrients, you know, inside Syria. They have not won so far the war against Bashar al-Assad. They have they have been losing it, and they have lost their strategy. They don't have enough strategy points here. They don't have an action plan. When Bandar was taking charge, only Bandar was making strategic visits to either Washington or Moscow, trying to convince the most is to pressure Vladimir Putin to take out his standing point or his, you know, positive always pressure.
And they have even lost this at one point. We've seen how through John Kerry, of course, we have seen how they've lost this U.S. trust. I mean, especially after the new diplomacy used between U.S. and Iran, that by itself actually made a catastrophe within within the GCC, and the trust was actually touched here between the US and the GCC. So as if they even, from this image and propaganda that they, or the image that they have been prevailing to the international, internationally, of course, as if they lost even the trust of the US.
They have.
And relationship with it.
And the US has lost the trust of the Saudis because not only the Iranian nuclear power plant standing point of the Americans, the Saudis were interested, like the Israelis, they had common interest to bombard Iran and let go with the nuclear power plants inside Iran. So there was common interest until now. I just came from the United States, by the way, Farah.
Okay.
And I've been hearing rumors in the United States, in Washington, D.C., that secret meetings have been held, you know, talks between the Israeli Mossad or Israeli highest interest groups inside Washington, like the AIPAC, with the Saudis, in order to have a certain action plan for the Middle East interest that they can combine interests together.
Yes.
Not only the nuclear power plant, but also the Syrian crisis. The Americans, if you remember with me, they did not go for the war. He did not order his troops, I meant the President of the United States, to take charge against Bashar al-Assad last year. So what they wanted is that the whole scenario that they were betting on, I meant the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the Israelis themselves,
failed.
They have failed. They put them down, actually, the Americans.
And that's why now they chose to give this new image of their,
That's why they lost some trust, or bigger trust now. But do not forget, Barack Obama is on the footstep. He's going right now to Saudi Arabia very soon.
Yes.
And he's going to hold very important talks with the king himself and his cabinet.
And probably, of course, Obama, president of the U.S., wouldn't have made that move if not changing Bandar bin Sultan. I mean, here he can actually go under the umbrella of a change inside Saudi Arabia, or because of that change that has happened, and now they're leaning towards a more moderate a moderate foreign policy. Therefore, Obama has a chance to actually go to that country or visit the country.
I have read very important thing by the Washington Post yesterday, a political analyst, I don't remember his name, but I mean, this is what he said. He said this is the most important visit for any U.S. president to Saudi Arabia, and this is the most difficult task upon the president himself to convince the Saudis in order to get back the Saudis to the American trust, actually, to the bilateral confidence, you know, partnership in the Middle East and in the Gulf States.
Okay,
actually,
we'll take a first break, Doctor, and be right back. Two of you will stay with us. Welcome back. Doctor, many say that change in names does not mean a change in foreign policies or a change in stances towards what's happening inside Syria. And that there is no, I've heard that a lot, there is no difference between Bandar bin Sultan or Prince Nayef. I mean, the Saudi structure is to fund these terrorist groups, whoever they are, wherever they are, in order to show this new Middle East that would be to their favor and would make them actually dominant within the Middle East, yes. And at least to be stronger in front of Iran, which they believe is the most important enemy to them. Here, how do you read it? Do you agree with these analyses that say that changing names, they only changed names and not changed the real foreign policy?
No, I think they have changed their inner policies, foreign okay. speaking, because when they consider terrorist groups like Daesh or the ISIS and the Nasra Front as terrorist groups so far, and the Brotherly Muslims, mm-hmm. that at one point the Saudis, when Morsi was in power, I remember when he was elected as president of Egypt, actually, before he was sent home, I mean, after a coup d'etat by the Egyptian army and the mm-hmm. people of the of mm-hmm. Egypt, and the successful, actually, coup d'etat. So things have been changing towards a new wind, actually, okay. of change.
Yes.
You know, that Saudis have been exploring so far in the Middle East, mm-hmm. and they have been pressured to take an action, actually, and think about a new image for them, because mm-hmm. I think they have realized so far that President Bashar al-Assad have won landslide mm-hmm. inside his own territories. Mm-hmm. And so far, before the successful victory in Yabrud, he has won in Homs, okay. he has won in Aleppo, he's been winning in Aleppo, and he's taken coverage all around his country. Mm-hmm. So he's in a better standard, he's in
okay.
better shape.
Starting from this point and adding to more reasons for yes. this change within the Saudi foreign policies or even inner policies,
yes.
Here, can we say that the success and the advancements of the Syrian army, in addition to the help of Hezbollah
yes.
from Lebanon and sure. Syria, of course, this cooperation between Hezbollah and the Syrian army and the advancements that they have actually achieved so mm-hmm. far mm-hmm. inside Syria, especially mm-hmm. in a very sensitive area such as Yabrud, mm-hmm. which means a lot to the Takfiris and to the terrorists, can we say that the advancements that these groups have actually achieved over there led to the removal or the siding of Bandar bin Sultan and this major change in foreign policy? I mean, if this wouldn't have happened, have we been seeing what we're seeing now in Saudi Arabia?
Now, this, I mean, I don't agree with you, but
okay.
I think it could be, yes or no. I mean, there's a,
yes.
there's a possibility. But what I believe is that Prince Bandar bin Sultan is not a positive image in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of enemies around. If you look around,
yes.
you
but
know,
he promised to actually bring Syria to the benefit of the Saudis and actually topple Bashar Assad within months. But eventually, he failed.
He failed. Now, the mission actually by the foreign agenda of the mm. Saudis is how to stabilize the nation of Syria and bring back peace talks.
Okay.
I believe the Saudis have diminished their own goals or objectives in order so far to stabilize the whole issue, because pressure internationally have been, you know, coming on the heads actually of the Saudi
mm-hmm.
royals, let's
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Americans moving in today or tomorrow, let's say Barack Obama inside Saudi Arabia, I think I have a sense
yes.
that there's a brokering of a deal between all the fighting nations mm-hmm. inside Syria today.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Americans do not want war in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians would like to stabilize the area after the Ukrainian, you know, issue so far, because
yes,
the Ukrainian has an impact for sure
mm.
for the foreign agenda of the Russians, actually, or the Putin.
Definitely.
And Putin is in a stronger position so mm. far in Syria, because,
mm.
I mean, the Western analysts or the Americans, they're saying, no, he's going to weaken down if we let them go inside Ukraine, or we let them be a bit of, busy. Let us make him busy in Ukraine and move him off the Syrian crisis scenario or the
mm-hmm.
whole market inside Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, I think Putin is steadfast. He's been as an iron and steel man. He's been leading the Russians so far and leading the area in bringing up again Russia,
mm-hmm.
you know, vis-a-vis the Americans, because the Americans were taking charge of the whole area
mm-hmm.
in the past decade. Now we're seeing two more powers again rising up after the Soviet Union was, you know, de-escalated or you mm-hmm. know, dismantled actually in 1990. after the Saudi.
Of course, we've highlighted the message that Saudi Arabia is trying to actually prevail through, of course, such changes. Is it only to actually comfort the U.S., or is it to actually keep some kind of dignity, at least? I mean, after all the accusations along the years by their allies and non-allies, of course, the Saudis. Have there other also reasons for this change here in Saudi Arabia?
No, I believe it could be because you know, any change politically and militarily inside Saudi and Syria. Mm. Let's say if the Nusra Front and all those Islamic terrorist groups inside Syria today would have led the war against Bashar al-Assad and they have defeated him, God forbid. Now this thing will have an image, you know, will have an impact for sure on not only the economic values of the Saudi market,
because they have spent but also a lot the political of money standards. And invested a lot
of course, they have put billions of dollars in arms and in logistics and in people, because they recruited people coming in, and this was the this was the job by Prince Bandar bin Sultan at one point, in cooperation, by the way, with the Member of Parliament of Lebanon, Oukab Saer, and in support with Saadeddine Hariri at one point.
Okay.
So the whole scenario that we're seeing today, Farah, is that there's a big change.
Yes.
I believe the change will be coming soon. I believe a peaceful wind is coming soon to the area. I believe so. Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Okay, Doctor, to what extent do you imagine or even see that these talks actually now made by Saudi Arabia or by the Gulf Cooperation Council about not supporting a Nusra Front or even listing them at the in the terrorist paper as a terrorist group here, to what extent do you think that it's fabricated at one point, probably? And on the other hand, they will still fund them, but at least to preserve this image and to keep what has been left from this image. And that's why they try to actually show the public and the international media that probably they are not supporting these groups. In fact, they list them as a terrorist groups, but at the same time, still fund them at one point. Isn't that available, or isn't that seen in politics?
Now, this is not weird to the Saudi mentality. Mm. It could be, I mean, handling such an issue, I mean, behind the scenes, at the same time they're handling, their funding, actually, and logistically giving them support, at the same time they disregard them and they treat them as terrorist groups.
Exactly, but in order to, or at least to achieve their own aim and say, toppling Bashar Assad.
They are trying their best, this is what I've said earlier, to win any war or any battle, actually, inside Syria today, whether at Homs or abroad or in the east or in the north, they have not been successful.
Okay.
The Syrian army, with the help of Hezbollah for sure, because Hezbollah guerrillas have been really successful in tactics, the way they strategized, the way they had experience in South Lebanon against Israel. So this has led the Syrian army in its victories actually on ground. Now not only this, but the Saudis themselves, they have created a gap, actually, because of the relationship within the Gulf states. Mm-hmm. If we all remember 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the relationship with Qatar was different than now.
Yes.
Qataris are way off of the Saudi intelligence or the Saudi foreign agenda, let's say, through the Prince Saud bin Faisal and through the late actually holder or the manager for the file of Syria, which is Bandar. Bandar is waived. Now we have a new prince handling such an issue. It could be a change of a scenario.
Yes.
I believe there should be a change by the mentality, by the foreign agenda, and by the execution, executing such a change on ground, actually.
It has been cited that even the new prince, of course, he is going to reach out to Iran, even. And reach out to Hezbollah.
Excellent.
And that more diplomacy is going to be involved. Yes. Do you believe in this?
Yes, I believe in this. If you realize with me, I was going to tell you,
because
and
of
you
the
just raised the question.
Need, because of the extensive
no,
need.
No, Farah, if you remember just, I mean, handling the whole issue, when Saudi Arabia, issued the declaration by the king that these are groups terrorists, I was shocked not to hear that Hezbollah is not a terrorist group, according to the Saudis, because Hezbollah has been defeating, actually, the goals of Saudi Arabia on the Syrian ground. So that's why I raised the
Hezbollah
question.
Hezbollah was listed by...
Hezbollah of Saudi Arabia,
yes,
not Hezbollah of Lebanon, if you realize
that.
So Hezbollah of Lebanon was waived from being quote-unquote, I mean, as terrorists, that they're not being issued a warning by the Saudis, and this is a positive signal, I believe, towards the Iranian, not only
great
the diplomacy.
Point that you highlighted.
Yes, and the Lebanese actually issue, because Lebanon will be relieved actually, in case the Saudis analyze such a thing or declare such a thing, that Hezbollah of Lebanon is not on the
so
agenda.
So it's possible,
right now,
doctor.
Being
it's possible that
very
kind
possible.
Of diplomacy that is.
Because if you realize with me now, the President Sheikh Hassan Rouhani, God be with him.
Yes.
He's going to travel to Sultanate of Oman upon the invitation of Sultan Qaboos very soon,
okay.
Within days. This strategic visit will open the doors for him to go to Saudi Arabia, and then could be the royal king will visit the Iranians. So we're seeing more diplomatic efforts in order to relieve the whole issues in the Middle East. I meant the two bigger standing points, Saudis vis-a-vis the Iranians. Once you see a more closer look between both parties, I think this will have a positive impact to us on Lebanon and inside Syria war today.
What will happen to all these terrorists on the ground that has been sponsored by Saudi Arabia through Prince Bandar, bin Sultan, as we highlighted?
Yes.
What are we looking at now inside Syria once the main funder and the main supporter has been sided?
Very important question, Farah. If you fund someone at the point for 2 years and you stop the funding for them, how are they going to go on? They need food, they need logistics, they need weapons to fight,
and they need political support and political coverage.
Exactly. I think they're going to lose their credibility at one point very soon. They're going to lose the battles on ground. And as such, they will run off or either be killed by the government troops on the ground.
Okay, so are we seeing kind of a surrendering here? By what has happened and implications of siding Bandar bin Sultan, because eventually they were about to lose the battle, so therefore they surrender before losing?
It could be this. I believe more like a certain consensus international have been made so far, but I don't have enough keys to answer your questions better. I believe the cooperation between the United States and even the Russians, indirectly between Lavrov and John Kerry, this has paved the way for them to have positive remarks, positive results on the grounds of Syria vis-a-vis, the regional powers like Saudi Arabia and the Iranians.
Of course, before moving to the dispute between Qatar and the other PGCC countries, to what extent do you highlight or see that what has happened in Saudi Arabia is because of a U.S. pressure to side Bandar bin Sultan, a U.S. pressure to change their own foreign policy, a U.S. pressure to actually lean towards a more moderate Islamic
I believe
view because of the U.S., because the U.S. now is actually accused of being an ally of those supporting Al-Qaeda eventually.
No, the United States, honestly enough, have been fighting so far, not only diplomatically, on the ground, they gave actually, they funded groups
of Syria. Weapons.
But they have lost the battle so far against the regime of Bashar al-Assad, as to all analysts say. Now they have lost it, they have been defeated on the grounds of Syria, their diplomacy has not been successful, so they have been pressuring the Saudis to take a certain action, a new agenda.
Save
in
both
order,
the U.S.
Exactly, to relieve the U.S. from such an international pressure, not only the Europeans, the Iranians from one point, and the Russians at the other point. Because it's an international, fighting for diplomacy, let's say. Mm-hmm. It's not only the war inside Syria. Syrian war is an image for the whole international scenario right now, in the whole globe, according to some analysts and according to us.
Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain have recalled their ambassadors to Qatar after accusing Doha of interfering in the internal affairs of their own countries.
Yes.
How do you read this unexpected Persian Gulf dispute?
It was unexpected, but up to a point I was expecting such a move, because the Saudis, for example, they would like to see the Qataris in support for the Saudis, actually the officials, especially after the prince took over, Prince Tamim, which is a young man. Mm-hmm. It could be a different agenda than his predecessor, which is his father. Now the Sheikh Hamad was closer to the Saudis than Prince Tamim. It seems that the Qataris would like to have a unique standing point on the foreign diplomacy, not only to the shape or to the uniqueness of the Gulf states, and the Persian states for sure, Iran. Now they want to have a moderate standing point in order to relieve themselves from huge international pressure and local and regional pressure. I think when the new prince came into power, he relieved his own state or emirate Qatar, and he has been successful up to a point to open up and rediscover issues that can help or benefit its own state. Now, the problem, we all, if you remember with me, Farah, the Saudis, the Bahrainis, they don't want any Qatari involvement with the oppositionists. Mm-hmm. Right now, I meant the Shiites against the kingdom himself or the Sheikh Khalifa. Mm-hmm. In United
the
Arab Emirates,
supporting, these,
Qatar, yes, they've been blaming the Bahrainis that the Qataris have been supporting indirectly and trying to be on the agenda as human rights, you know, activists. Mm-hmm. I mean, according to some analysts, Europeans,
under that reason,
that the Qatar looks, because Qatar has been redepletion itself and recontinuing, actually, according to some analysts, mm-hmm. that they believe in human rights more than other states, actually, in the Gulf states, I mean. Okay. Not the Iranians. I meant the Saudis, the Bahrainis, and the United Arab Emirates. Do not forget also that the Qataris support for Sheikh Al-Qardawi mm-hmm. to open up a huge office with 200 religious men and business people has created such a chaos between the relationship of Qatar and Dubai or Abu Dhabi, mm-hmm. I mean the capital Abu Dhabi of the United Arab Emirates, and this has made them as such as lack of confidence, and this has created to withdraw the ambassador from Qatar by the United Arab Emirates.
Excellent.
Now the Saudis has a different point, is that the Egyptian Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is closer now to the Saudis, not like the Qataris, because the Qataris used to support the brotherly Muslims. Mm-hmm. So there was a conflict according to the Egyptian agenda by both states. I mean the Qataris and the Saudis. But on the ground of Syria also, after taking charge, the Prince Tamim, he has a different agenda than his dad was,
okay.
or his father. Mm-hmm. So
obviously it's
two
a long
obstacles.
Dispute that now
exactly.
actually have been out to the public.
Please go ahead.
Excuse me, we need to take a final break here. Dear viewers, stay with us. We'll be right back. Dear viewers, welcome back. Doctor, of course, we'll be speaking more about this long history of dispute, obviously, as you're highlighting, between Qatar and other PGCC. But here, of course, a question that comes to mind is that why would Saudi Arabia, as long as it was or it was still, it's still funding these extremists inside Syria, along with Qatar,
yes.
of course, and other Persian Gulf countries, why would they place Qatar in the face, of course, here, or even push Qatar to the edge and put it as if, or as at least give it the image that it's the only one supporting these groups at times where other Persian Gulf countries were supportive.
Exactly.
Why are they putting it in front here?
Or the only one responsible
and
for
only
such
one responsible.
Groups.
Exactly. Why would
because they
want
to run away from their defeat, actually, of their own standing point, militarily.
And probably Qatar has a long dispute between them, so it was the
exactly.
one that was picked up randomly.
I think it's a political maneuvering in order to show the Qataris how not important to them, actually, to the Saudis, and that they have not been successful on the grounds of Syrian. Even though the Qataris, just like you said, they were cooperating and they were partners and allies actually with the Saudis mm-hmm. to fund actually and donate
yes.
for those terrorist groups. I mean Daesh, you mm-hmm. know, Front Nusra and all those, Islamic groups inside Syria today. Now the Qataris after, this is a very important point, after the Prince Tamim took over, he changed the values for his foreign agenda.
Yes.
He looked at it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. He has a new angle and he would like to balance between such angles that his father used to see according to the Syrian right now scenario mm-hmm. and the way he sees it. He doesn't want to, let all the people, pressure him by saying, oh, your father have lost everything. He has been defeated. No, he wants to show to the whole world, not only the Arab world, that he has he's been continuing the path of his father, but he wants it to be a more moderate path, mm-hmm. a more moderate point at standing point. Actually, not only to the Syrian war right now, but according to some analysts, according to the Gulf states, he wants to be looked at upon that he is a moderate figure and he can be a standing point between all Gulf states mm-hmm. in order to represent them and have an impact to the international foreign agenda by international powers like the Russians, the Americans, and the Europeans.
So he's trying to have an international diplomatic.
Exactly. And he enjoys it. I was reading such a report that he enjoys to do that, and he is specialized in foreign relations more than his dad was.
Okay.
He's into it.
But, Doctor, will the Qataris survive away from the GCC umbrella here? I mean, they've been for a very long time under that umbrella, and we do know that that umbrella supports or provides many facilities to these Persian Gulf countries. And we've seen the greatest proof on that in Bahrain. Once Bahrain was actually threatened of a toppling, we've seen the invasion of Saudi inside under
the
GCC,
Gulf Shield.
Under Gulf Cooperation Council treaties, or even articles that have been signed by the group. GCC have been providing a lot of support to these countries. Will Qatar today survive alone, away from the GCC umbrella?
No, Qatar is not in this point, I think. Mm. It's not trying to delete itself or try to be away from all the Gulf states. I meant the Arab Gulf, not the Persian Gulf. Now, the thing is that if you look at it, they did not withdraw their own ambassador from these three states that we just mentioned, the United Arab Emirates, the Saudis, and the Bahrainis, the Kingdom of Bahrain. So they are not planning to be away from all those Gulf states. They want to be in the middle, and they want to continue with the relationships of those nations because they believe they're brotherly.
So that move that Qatar did not take.
Qatar will not take, I believe.
Because they wanted to preserve some kind of connection.
To stay in that countries. Connection and keep that relationship as stable as possible.
Mm-hmm. Way back, probably.
Even though it's not stable. It's unstable relationship right now between the Qataris and the Saudis, vis-a-vis the Bahrainis, for sure. And the United Arab Emirates.
Okay.
Now, the thing is that they need better communication levels between both nations or all nations in the Gulf Arab states. I believe they need to topple such issues by discussing it openly and honestly and transparently enough in order to let all the negative feelings or the negative communication techniques between all the nations in the Arab Gulf states. They need to uphold this, you know.
Doctor, can we say that the fight lately that has been occurring between the opposition within Syria among themselves, speaking about Daesh, Shabhat al-Nusra Front, or even other terrorist groups inside Syria, can we say that what has been happening is a major reflection of this Qatari-Saudi or Qatari-Gulf, Persian Gulf countries dispute? I mean, as if Qatar was supporting one side and Saudis were supporting the other, and they were fighting among themselves on the Syrian land, and now it has been translated by this dispute that has happened out loud, of course, and through the public.
I think it's an extremely important point, what you just mentioned, because the Qatari point right now, it's in the middle. It used to be with the Saudis, let's say.
So they have been fighting among each other in Syria.
Putting themselves in the middle give more relief to the regime of Bashar al-Assad. Mm-hmm. Gives it more positive, remarks, not only by international standards, but locally. So the Qatari standing point right now, not to support and not to donate like the Saudis and the Bahrainis, let's say, or the Emirates and the international powers like the Americans and the Western, not the Russians for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, this has put Qatar in a situation, it could be a more positive image to the Syrian market or the senior Syrian. Mm-hmm. And vis-a-vis as such, you remember with me yesterday, the freeing of the nuns, actually of the Christian nuns of Ma'lula. Mm-hmm. This has been an important role, or this has relieved actually Qataris and the state of Qatar by showing a different humanitarian. And that's why I just mentioned earlier the human rights values that they believe in, that they want to show the whole world that Qatar is at a new standing point. It's not like the father who was ruling before. Mm-hmm. So he wants to show a new image for his own nation. Mm-hmm. He wants to develop his foreign skills much better by his own staff, and he wants to take action or take the lead actually inside the Middle East.
Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the UAE said that the PGCC member states had signed an agreement on November 23, 2013, not to support anyone threatening the security and stability of the GCC, whether as groups or even individuals, via direct security work or even through political influence, and not to support hostile media. Why would Qatar even sign this of course treaty or even articles between each other, as long as they would breach it later? Or at least if that has happened, what is Saudi afraid of? How would Qatar affect the GCC as a whole here?
Now, I think the lack of confidence between Saudis and the Qataris themselves, in order not to infiltrate any Islamic militants or Islamic thoughts or Islamic parties, inside the Saudi That's why Saudi has been the leader actually in the Gulf to initiate such a move.
And Qatar probably does not want to see that.
Exactly.
Because they feel that they are a well-developed society with a well-developed technology.
Not only this, Mrs. Farah, it will have a response on them. Because in order to let such parties or militants go in, the Saudis by the Qataris, in order to support such a thing, it will have a response on their own actually scenario and in their own state. So I think they were very reluctant in order not to let or infiltrate any militants or any Islamic parties inside the Gulf states, because they can play such a role, a very important role. Well, vis-a-vis that, the Qataris believe that the unity of the Gulf states, and it's for their own for their own positive remarks. They want to see the unity at the same time, but they would not like to see the Saudis giving them like the like a teacher and giving them, whipping them out. Let's say they want to take.
At times they were they became leaders in their own.
If you remember with me, I mean, in the past 3 years or 4 years until now, the Qataris, they have played very important role in North Africa and in the Middle East during the father's rule, the Sheikh Hamad and the Prince Tamim. He would like to continuously develop that. So they want to show the whole world that Qatar is not a small state. It can have an extremely power, you know, that it can benefit the whole Middle East and the surrounding Arab states, especially in the Gulf states. But the Saudis have been reluctant to give that point, because they are the leaders, they consider themselves according to the Arab world.
Okay, and is it possible that signing an agreement on November 23, 2013, not to support anyone threatening the GCC as a whole, not only Saudi Arabia, it started from the perspective that Saudi Arabia was threatened of any internal uprising within Saudi Arabia towards their own foreign policies, and probably at one point thought that Qatar is enhancing that here, and that's why it felt threatened.
Now, the there have been rumors. This is a very important question too, Farah, because the rumors have been saying that the Qataris have been helping or assisting the Shiites of the east of Saudi Arabia in Dammam and as such like Al-Qatif areas and some villages around in the, on the east coast of Saudi Arabia, in order to retaliate or to have an uprising and a revolution against the royal family inside Saudi Arabia. So, I mean, this has been put as a barrier actually and gave a lack of trust and confidence between the two states, I mean Saudi Arabia and Qatar itself. Now, there should be more efforts diplomatically and just like I mentioned before, and better communication levels to upgrade them and to enhance them or to boost them between both nations in order to support and bring back that confidence between the two nations that have been so far in the past, let's say, three or four decades so far until
what will be the repercussions of such a dispute between Saudi Arabia, GCC, and Qatar? What will be the repercussions of this new dispute that has been seen out public? And will we see more developments, more sanctions posed at least by Saudi Arabia on Qatar within the coming days? Or you see it more leaning towards a more diplomacy?
I believe the withdrawal of the ambassadors was enough action, I think, by the Saudis.
We want to see more developments.
I hope not, because this is not to the benefit of Saudis or the Bahrainis and the Emiratis. You know, I believe this will be seen as a bad image, actually, and this will not market the unity in the Gulf states, actually, that they need as a council.
Yes, but it seems that Qatar actually feels that they can do everything alone, and they're not in need of the PGCC, and therefore no need to actually go back, or at least they're not afraid of any more sanctions that can be imposed on them.
Now, the lack of immunity between all nations in the Arab Gulf states, this has given the edge over for the Qataris, actually, in order to pinpoint such issues.
Okay.
And when they need to develop their skills, I think, they needed a brotherly, you know, nation or an assistant, actually, or by other, you know, Arab states and the Gulf states. What they need is to open up always and have this more stable and an edge over Saudis and Bahrainis. Open up, do not, you know, act in response to the withdrawal of ambassadors at the same, because under the protocols of international foreign diplomacy that I know, Farah, any nation who another nation, friendly nation, withdraws its ambassador, you can do the same thing. You can withdraw your own ambassador.
But Qatar refused to make that.
Qatar refused because they do not want to have more tension to such a relationship. They want to put it down at ease, cool it down, and then when it's time to develop such a relationship to the more, you know, a more better, technically speaking, diplomatic edge for both the nations, I believe they need to communicate better. They need to develop such skills and come closer to each other transparently enough in order to re-energize such you know, a relationship.
Of course, you will see the implications of such dispute among the PGCC and how that will reflect on the Syrian crisis.
For sure.
Of course, within the coming days, more scenarios would be cleared here. Thank you very much, Dr. Maher Salouman, Ambassador for Peace, for this great analysis in today's show.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. Dear viewers, that's all the time that we have. Thank you for watching. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.